With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. You're listening to Sonya Poulton on today's News Talk, TNT.
Good morning, wonderful world. How are you? Hump Day, Wednesday, March the 27th, 2024. In the UK, we are edging ever closer to the Easter weekend. Actually, one of my favourite holidays in the year, despite the fact that I'm not actually religious. But here we are. And it's looking like it's going to be a glorious day in the UK, although absolutely chucked down. I think it was yesterday, or was it the day before? I'm getting confused. My days are getting confused. So I'm sure by now you've heard the Julian Assange ruling, which was handed down at London's High Court yesterday, and whereby two High Court judges have allowed the USA to provide assurances that they won't harm the journalist if he is extradited. And if they fail to provide these assurances, then Assange can go ahead and appeal the decision to extradite him. Frankly, this was a most bizarre and twisted move. So twisted that it even confused WikiLeaks, who tweeted that Julian Assange had been granted the right to appeal extradition shortly before being forced to delete it, because it was true up to a point, but not entirely, because the reality was the judgment wasn't straightforward at all. Far from it. Unfortunately, this created confusion for many, including me, who took my information from WikiLeaks, but we were far, far from alone. MSM also got it wrong, including Sky News and NBC. You know, the fact is that I've been reading judgments for an awful long time, and this was not clear cut. And it was almost like it was aimed to confuse everybody. And while I find it hard to actually find any common ground with legacy media on this, I must. The judgment confused some people because it's littered with obfuscation and delay. Essentially, as I say, Julian has been granted the right to appeal. On that, there is some truth, but it's delayed and subject to most peculiar conditions that will further lock him in to a never-ending spiral of the legal system. So the judges gave 3 weeks for the US to give assurances, and as long as they do that, then we are to pack him off to what? The country that has already allegedly tried to kidnap and kill him? I sincerely hope that this will all be thwarted, of course, and the judges have said if this is not forthcoming, then Assange will be immediately granted the right to appeal extradition. But it seems extraordinarily cruel and political, and I'm sure a million other things, and I'll be joined later by journalist Taylor Hudak, who will break down her understanding of it. There was mixed reaction to the judgment, although not from Assange's wife, Stella, who outside the Royal Courts of Justice gave an impassioned speech. She said that the decision was astounding. Yes, indeed it was. I think it was a decision that actually nobody prepared for. It was discriminated against him on the basis of nationality, of his nationality being an Australian. She said he remains exposed to the death penalty. She said that the courts have invited political intervention from the US. The US have managed, she says, to show courts that the case remains an attack on press freedom and Julian's life. And courts also have not agreed to look at the evidence that the US had plotted to kidnap him. And because, as she said, if they did, then they couldn't possibly send him to the States, which in itself is a troubling thought. And she highlighted, as she rightly should, the impact on journalism. The fact is that Julian, as she said, exposed the true cost of war in human lives. This case is retribution to all of you, she said, and sort of indicating towards the press that if you expose war, they will put you in prison and they will try to kill you. 5 years in Belmarsh without conviction. She said he published war crimes by the country that has tried to extradite him. And she went on, quite rightfully so. She said that he's punished for expressing freedom of the press in its purest form. It is, as I say, a shocking, confusing, muddling, a bizarre decision. Again, we have to look at whether there has kind of been some sort of not political interference, because I'm not for a second accusing High Court judges of that. But clearly there's something that is a little uncomfortable for all of us about this ruling. And as I say, it sort of hit us left to center. What on earth? It just came out of nowhere. And not clear cut at all. And that is exactly why it confused so many. And, you know, I think The whole thing is absolutely barbaric and not at all fitting in a so-called democracy. Right, on that note, let us go and find out what is happening with the UK headlines this morning from Gemma Cooper.
Clashing on the controversies.
It's a woke society and I am fed up with it.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And good morning to you, Gemma. How are you on this hump day?
Now look at us, we've got matching outfits. Look at this. It's some kind of hump day thing going on. It's almost matching, isn't it? Colour coordinated. If you're watching,
you'll
see. We
often do this with red. Have you noticed it's red that we do this with? It's quite bizarre. I wonder if it's something in the air. Who can ever tell? I love red. I think it's a powerful, bold colour. It's a determined colour, isn't it? It means we mean business, and we do mean business around here, don't we, Gemma?
Red for danger, Sonia. Red for danger. Anyway, onto some headlines. I mean, unsurprisingly, those pictures of the bridge at Baltimore, you know, they're dominating many of the MSM outlets. I mean, how could they not? That really shocking and extraordinary scenes. You know, I was talking about that story with many people. Many other presenters on TNT yesterday, and it's like watching one of our iconic bridges going down. You know, where I live, you've got the two bridges connecting England and Wales, the first and second crossings, seven crossings, and of course the fourth bridge in Scotland. You know, it's like that. It's like one of our iconic structures just collapsing. So unsurprisingly, the images are dominating. It's not a breaking story, but there are obviously concerns about the supply chains, global supply chains that come out of that part of the world. And the UK does actually get a lot of its liquefied natural gas from the port of Baltimore. It exports 500,000 tons of that material every year. So there are fears for what that might mean and the knock-on effects to the UK. Otherwise, though, it's quite a grim raft of headlines as we head towards the Easter weekend. You can kind of tell things are slowing down as we get towards the holiday season, but still, shocking headline out today, but not surprising that public confidence in the NHS is at an all-time low. Only a quarter now of the UK population say they're happy with the services that GPs and hospitals are providing. This is a big report. It's been going on for 40 years, an annual report into public satisfaction with the NHS, and the results, they say, are shocking, with many saying enough is enough and it has to be the central issue now at the general election. Also, the church is under fire from the Home Office. This is due to the asylum row over the acid attacker Abdul Ezeki. He was granted asylum after being converted to Christianity by the Church of England here, despite failing some basic questions on the faith. And the Home Office is saying that this procedure of conversion to stay is undermining the asylum system and it is raising serious questions now. They want the church to answer. And also another grim headline, up to 8 million jobs could go in the UK over the next 3 to 5 years because of an AI apocalypse, AI taking over all our jobs. Women, part-time workers and the young are most at risk of losing their jobs due to the frightening rollout of new technology that's due to happen over the next 3 to 5 years. But I think it's the NHS. Don't forget, we pay for that. Public confidence now, an all-time low since it was ever founded. I think that's a really shocking statistic as we go into hump day.
Absolutely. Let us delve in on that, Gemma, because, you know, as you say, it impacts so many of us. I mean, I have much to say about this, including the fact that I believe it's an all planned controlled demolition. But please take it away for us.
Well, it was the surveys carried out by the British Social Attitude Survey, which is a yearly thing. Have been going since 1983, so that's more than 40 years now. And this is the gold standard survey that is used when looking at public satisfaction with the NHS. It's not what the government say. It's not what think tanks say. It's not what the Royal College of Nursing might say or the British Medical Association. It's what the public say. So it is really... It is looked at. And satisfaction between 2022 and 2023, because it's 2023 that is the results we're looking at, fell by 30%. And the big things are waiting times for GPs and for hospital appointments and also staff shortages, so that when you actually do get your appointment, you have to wait then in the GP surgery or in the hospital for hours and hours because there's no one to actually see you or do your tests. The kind of solutions proposed to the public on this were, do you want to pay more for your NHS and then see a better service? And many said no. Nearly half of the people surveyed said, we don't want to pay more. We want existing money to go to the right places. We know there is money in the NHS, but people feel it's being diverted to the wrong things like managers' salaries, things like diversity training, things like LGBTQ agenda awareness, you know, all of that. People say, we don't want that. We just want to see a doctor. You know, it's not rocket science. We just want to see a doctor. So the Patients Association and the Royal College of Nursing have come out all guns blazing on this, of course. You know, they represent patients. Patients Association say they're absolutely dismayed by the report. The Royal College of Nursing saying enough is enough. Voters need to make the NHS the central issue in the next election. The people that published the report say, we are calling on all the political parties now in an election year, because we are in an election year now, next 12 months, to be honest and open about the state of the NHS and put it front and center. I'm not sure the electorate will go down that road. I think immigration is still probably the headline for the election. I could be wrong on this, but it's certainly a damning indictment of what the public think of one of the major flagships. Used to be the kind of, you know, the jewel in the crown of Britain was the NHS. Not anymore. We used to be a world leader in healthcare. Not anymore. How we get that back, I don't know. This survey out today, only 25% of the population. And those are the people that kind of, you know, when people do surveys, you kind of say, oh, yeah, I'm kind of happy. You know, are they really happy, the 25% that are saying that they're satisfied, or are they kind of satisfied? You know what surveys are like. Is it really an honest indictment, or is that figure actually less? Less than the quarter of the population here, you know, and we've got a population of what, 60, 68 million. I think that's a really damning indictment of one of the things that, you know, we pay for.
I mean, can I say I'm not surprised, which is just unfortunate. I love the NHS. I've always been a huge supporter of the NHS. I've never used private healthcare in any way. And I've always been really happy to absolutely fund the system. I love the idea that care is available at the point of need. All of those things really appeal to me. But there is no doubt whatsoever, since Tony Blair, they have been breaking down the NHS in order to privatise it. Most damning, of course, was the Health and Social Care Bill around 2012-2013, spearheaded by David Cameron's coalition. There the aim was to create 49% privatised beds within the NHS. You talked about managers and diversity. All of those things are a real issue here. And there is no doubt whatsoever that the aim is to create in the UK an American-style insurance system. No doubt whatsoever. And one of the most damning things that happened around 2012-2013, Gemma, when they were pushing for the update to the Health and Social Care Bill, was that over 300 Lords and MPs who were allowed to vote had interest in private healthcare companies. At local level, you would not be allowed to do that. And so it was completely biased in so many respects. This absolutely is a controlled demolition. And don't forget, during COVID, we were encouraged to stand on our doorsteps and applaud, weren't we? Applaud for these people who were not only, you know, sort of contributing to real serious issues by, you know, being involved with an experimental jab and not standing up and being counted, but making lots of wonderful dancey TikToks. And so I think all of this has contributed to the dissatisfaction. I have my own issues with the NHS. I have concerns about what happened with both my brother and my sister over the last 3 and 2 years, who both died in the care of the NHS. And I know that I am not alone in that. So yes, I'm not at all surprised by that survey, Gemma, but I am devastated. I'm devastated because, as you so rightly said, this was really the sort of jewel in our crown, wasn't it? We've always been proud of the NHS. So, yeah, awful. Awful to hear that. That is a that is devastating news, but not at all surprising at all. Tell me more of your thoughts.
Well, I do think as well, it's the legacy of the last 4 years, because not only were we encouraged to bang our pots and pans like some kind of performing monkey for the NHS, which was a kind of brainwashing ritual without a doubt, we were encouraged not to use it. And I think that was part of the agenda of the last 4 years, is just stay away from this service, because we want to dismantle it. We want to change it. We, you know, and Matt Hancock, when he was health secretary, was absolutely wetting himself about the thought of virtual GP appointments, GP appointments on Zoom. You know, how you can have something diagnosed over Zoom is ridiculous. A GP needs to see the patient. One of the main tenants, my grandma was a nurse, one of the main tenants of the patient, you get them in the room. How does the patient look? What's their body language like? What's the tone of their voice? You can't get that on a Zoom call, but that's what Matt Hancock was trying to push through. And we were encouraged to stay away, to protect it somehow by not using it, which is a complete misnomer and a bit of gaslighting. But they want, obviously the government wants to restructure it along the lines of what you're saying. And what you're saying goes back so historically. They were probably champing at the bit to get these reforms and push them through. And the 4 years of the madness we've just been through was a classic way of doing that. Stay away so we can change it. And then when you come back, you won't recognize it. And people don't recognize it. In just 4 short years, the legacy of COVID, it's been completely unfit for purpose. And also another quote, actually, is that what was a world leader in healthcare is now treating patients in corridors, doorways, and store cupboards. Again, that's from the Royal College of Nursing. That is where we are. We've become a third world NHS service, a third world health service. I will put a caveat in here from the government. Let's make it balanced, shall we? The Department of Health has said today, as a reaction to this, progress is being made. Some signs that waiting lists are falling. Yeah, because people are dying. That's why. And we are now investing in GPs. I think they realize that the public mood has shifted so fast. That people have called them out. But still, that's where we are. I wish I wasn't bringing this headline. I feel the same way as you. My grandma was a nurse and she loved the NHS. My mum loved the NHS. She was a medical secretary. I don't want to bring my own thoughts into it. I don't particularly love the NHS. I think there's a hell of a lot wrong. And I think some of the people in it on the front line of care, their bedside manner could be improved, actually. But this report is what it is. Let's see if it is the front and centre election issue as we progress through 2024.
You have triggered an avalanche of comments. I must read you this from Craig. My wee gran is in hospital just now. She sat in the corridor all night on Saturday. No bed for her. She's bloody 89. NHS is falling apart. Devastating. Absolutely. And why not bring in something personal and private, actually, Gemma? Because that is what the NHS means to us in the UK, isn't it? It feels like it, you know, it feels like a friend. We've always been able to turn to it. And now we realise that we no longer can, which is absolutely devastating all round. Thank you so much for bringing the UK news headlines to us, Gemma. We'll see you in the next hour. We'll be right back.
TNT's James Freeman.
Now that I'm sitting on the other side of the fence, I see the budget in a very different light. I find the discussions and leaks in the press in the weeks running up to the budget totally patronising. You know, will he, won't he give us some tax cuts? When the reality is that nothing in the budget will make any material difference to anyone, pretty much. That's usually the story. It is a game of musical chairs where the government giveth with one hand and taketh with the other. And we're all reminded about how little money that we've got left in our pockets.
James Freeman on today's News Talk TNT. A better business tip from TNT Radio. One reason people tune in to TNT Radio is often because they're loyal to a specific show or personality. Our personalities have been a part of people's daily routine, and people continue to tune in. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live. If you're talking about it, we're talking about it. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Okay. Oh, welcome back. Yes, of course, Gemma has got us all talking as she is wont to do, which is absolutely wonderful. I'm now about to be joined by Charlie Sansom. He is a political commentator and someone who I only just discovered last night, who was actually the man who famously quit the Conservative Party chairmanship. You did it live on air, Charlie. This is so dramatic. What did you do?
Well, when I was a local chairman for the Conservatives, I was invited onto the BBC to talk about Plan B and the government's plans to vaccinate us and give us COVID passports and prevent us from going to get a loaf of bread and milk without having to show papers. And I was so outraged by it that I decided to call the government tyrants and quit live on air. I don't think the BBC were expecting that. The Conservatives certainly wasn't.
Well, we love a bit of that, frankly. We all need a bit of rebellion, certainly around this area. So thank you so much for joining us this morning. Greatly appreciate it. And we're actually, our first story actually involves the BBC. There's a shock. Of course, what we've had over the, I mean, it is, isn't it? It's so shocking. What we've had over the last few weeks, of course, is this whole Kategate thing. It's gone from the sublime to the ridiculous. And now BBC's Miss Disinformation, Mariana Spring herself, has co-authored a piece claiming that much of the disinfo around Kategate is coming from Russia-based disinfo groups. What are your thoughts about that, Charlie?
I think if it comes from Mariana Spring, it's likely not true. secondly, I think that leaning into the whole Russia narrative is quite lazy and pathetic from the BBC. I don't see how they can correlate the two parties, really. Why would the Russian government be interested in making us, the British public, ask questions about our own royal family? There's a debate about the royal family every week without the Russians' involvement, so I don't really understand that. And I was reading the article that the BBC published, and it said the BBC had tracked down these Russian hackers. Well, forgive me, but they can't even track down paedophiles in their own corridors, so I find this very hard to believe.
Charlie's going controversial so early in the morning, and I love it. You know, you're absolutely right. I mean, that is an excellent point. I've read the article as well, and I've highlighted some elements of it in front of me. And so security researchers believe a Russia-based disinformation group amplified and added to the frenzy of social media conspiracies about the Princess of Wales' health. They said that new security experts have been analysing social media data, and there were hallmarks. This is interesting. The researchers say this is consistent with the previous patterns of a Russian disinformation group. And as you say, this is lazy, isn't it? Russia is still the modern day bogeyman, isn't it? I mean, just like, come on, Mariana, you have to dig a little bit deeper, right?
Yeah, like I said before, it's lazy. And they tried this tactic on Donald Trump during his presidency, rather, not his presidential campaign, but his actual presidency as well. It didn't work with him. It's not going to work with this. Now, what people need to understand is that when the monarchy doesn't provide information, people ask questions. When they go missing, people ask questions. Now, for the first time, as far as I'm aware, they're now making up fake images of themselves, which to me, I don't really care about, if I'm completely honest. So she took a picture of her kids and had a little fiddle on Photoshop. It's not really that big of a deal. But the fact is, the media have drum this up into this big, where is she? What's going on? Then you had the grainy video of her and William outside a farm shop, which a lot of people don't believe was her anyway, because again, these are the most photographed people in the world. Yet the one image that we want to see of her is completely distorted and, you know, unusual compared to all the other high quality images that we already have. So, you know, the monarchy have actually brought this on themselves. I don't think Russia are bothered.
Yeah, no, I don't think they're bothered either. And what this article also claims is that actually the Russian disinfo agents are never bothered about the subject. The aim is always just to create chaos. And I see that they have pulled in Linda Yaccarina, who, of course, is the CEO of X, famously, who said freedom of speech, not freedom of reach. And Linda Yaccarina is quoted in this article saying her request for privacy to protect her children and allow her to move forward seems like a reasonable request to respect. And that's because X has been accused of allowing tweets which accuse this of being a false body double. But Charlie, I just want to say this to you, and that is, you say that it's not really an issue, you know, she's sort of recovering and everything, but as you also rightly say, the palace, it made it into an issue, didn't they, by all the sort of subterfuge. It could have been much more straightforward, couldn't it? They could have just said, she's going in for surgery. We have discovered an element of this surgery that is problematic. We want to, you know, sort of park this for now. But they made it all really kind of odd, putting out these weird, bizarre images. As you so rightly said, these are very world famous people. They should have just been more straightforward, shouldn't they?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think the palace, they previously, before the modern era, the monarchy survived on mystique and they're there, but you can't get near them. And, you know, they don't say much and never complain, never explain, that kind of narrative. So my personal view is that maybe they did this to drum that up again. Maybe it was a case of, look, this is a private matter. She does have cancer. I don't think it's necessary that the public needs to know every part of their lives. I mean, that should be something they announce when they feel comfortable doing so, I think. But at the same time, I think if they'd just come out sooner and said, look, we're in a bit of trouble, the king's ill, the future queen's ill, you know, we didn't know how to approach this, or maybe don't even admit that, maybe just think about it a little bit more cleverly and just announce it. It's not that big of a deal.
It all just seems so bizarre to me. And then, of course, Kate being forced to take responsibility for a really badly edited and manipulated snap that even world-leading picture agencies wiped their hands of, which in some respects is a first, you know, and now they're starting to look back at other images, of course, as well. Do you think this has had a negative impact on the royal family, or have they sort of escaped unscathed from this?
The papers will make you think it's a big deal, but I don't think it's a big deal. I mean, if they hadn't told you the picture was edited, would you have noticed yourself? I wouldn't have.
I must admit, when I did look at it, I thought that's really odd. And the first thing that I thought was odd was one of the children with his fingers all bent. You know, have you seen that? The fingers are all bent in a really odd way. And I was like, that's a really odd way to hold your hand when you're having a picture taken. And something about it didn't just sort of gel for me on a gut level. Something felt a bit off, but I don't claim to be an expert in these matters. So it took, you know, sort of Photoshop experts to say, well, actually, A doesn't equate to B, and there's a problem, a missing sleeve and everything. That sort of stuff I didn't see, but I could tell from the overall picture that something was a bit off and iffy about it. Look, Charlie, let's just park this a second. Let's go to some news headlines and let's be right back with the next story.
Now, TNT Radio News.
Joan House done.
Let's go.
I got news for you.
News.
Matt Boyland here with a look at your TNT headlines. Russia has accused the US and the UK of working with Ukraine to orchestrate last week's deadly terrorist attack in Moscow. There's been an awkward exchange between two journalists inside the Kremlin, with a Russian news chief delivering a spectacular smackdown to a BBC reporter. And Argentina's President Javier Milei is reportedly planning on firing 70,000 government workers in the coming months.
Globalist agendas, democratic rights at risk, corruption, propaganda. It never stops. For the news and views silenced by the mainstream media, by government and corporations, vote one. TNT Radio. Free speech always has a home here. Stay up to date with the latest live news and current affairs delivered by our lineup of expert commentators and hosts. Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
Welcome back and welcome to you all, of course, wherever you are and wherever you're watching this and wherever you're commenting, whether that's on X or on YouTube or on Rumble or right here on TNT. And please keep your comments coming in. I will be turning to them very, very shortly. I'm joined by Charlie Sansom today. He pulled the ultimate badass move by resigning live on air and from the Tory party, which frankly gets a thumbs up from me. Now, Charlie, let us move to the next story. This is an extraordinary story. The Home Office have been granting visas to non-existent care homes as a new report. So basically, the idea is that care homes are allowed to sponsor visas to bring in workers from overseas. Now, we know that this exists, and we know that many of our carers are foreign-born and they're coming in from overseas. But what we're actually discovering in this report, that visas are being granted literally to care homes that do not exist. This is a system that is ripe for corruption, right?
I mean, I'm not really surprised. I mean, we can't control the border. We've got people coming in on boats willy-nilly. This is quite surprising, though. You would have thought there'd have been a bit more strictness involved in this one, because you're actually employing people to look after people in care homes. So you'd expect there to be a bit more stringency there. But one thing that struck me reading this was that the guy who wrote the reports has now been sacked.
Right.
And that is a bigger eyebrow raiser to me than the whole story itself. Why would you sack the guy who's exposed it all? Or maybe that's why.
Well, this is interesting. That's David Neil you're referring to. And he was, so he was sacked as the chief inspector of borders and immigration last month. So he produced a report and was actually sacked from the role of borders and immigration. Yeah, that is extraordinary, isn't it? Neil's report sets out the consequences of the Home Office's limited understanding of the social care sector, its underestimation of demand for the care workers visa, the inappropriateness of its sponsored licensing regime for low-skilled roles, and the mismatch between its meagre complement of compliance officers, an ever-expanding register of licensed sponsors. That sounds like a whole lot of management speak going on there. I mean, honestly, this seems like an absolute mess. So where do we start with this, Charlie? As you've absolutely highlighted, we can't even control our own borders. So clearly there are problems here. Do you think that there are problems within the government in terms of it being a globalist government? So they are taking care of their friends overseas in other countries, other leaders, for example. Are there issues like that involved in this?
I would say so. I don't understand. I never have understood the immigration issue, and I don't understand why these stories keep coming up in some fashion, because the public don't want it. the public want some accountability. And with this, you're getting less than. In fact, this looks more criminal than anything else. At least with the boat crossings, you can say, ah, well, a few slipped through the net. With this, it looks like it's calculated. And that's the issue that I think many people are going to have.
I mean, it appears to me to be clear corruption. They need to get to the bottom of it, because what this report also draws our attention to, 275 certificates of sponsorship granted to one care home that did not exist. Okay. And I mean, all of that's quite extraordinary. And what they say is that in these two examples, up to 1,500 people could have arrived in the country and been encouraged by risk of hardship or destitution to work outside the conditions of their visa. So this is encouraging criminality, right?
It is encouraging criminality. You're absolutely correct. And how do you give licenses to care homes that don't exist? I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if some Tory lord has got shares in these invisible companies, would you?
I wouldn't be surprised at all, because of course what we've heard before is that there has been political involvement in some of the hotels that are being rented out to asylum seekers. So we know that, in the same way as when they, you know, flogged off the council house in stock, it was a whole lot of MPs who rushed to buy them up, right, and then rent them out. And that was across the political parties. So, you know, it seems to me that our politicians are not representing us. They're representing themselves. And Charlie, what can we do about it? As a political commentator, what can we do to change the political system? We were hearing from, I know it's a small question to a big answer. I appreciate that. But any contribution is welcome, because in the same way as Gemma just highlighted, our deep dissatisfaction with the NHS, we also have deep dissatisfaction with our political system, right? Who trusts an MP these days?
Nobody. And it's a great question. And I smiled as you asked it, because I thought there isn't really an answer in a two-party system, because what you're seeing with the Conservatives after 14, 15 years of them really controlling everything isn't really going to change when Labour come in, because Labour believe in these policies. They believe in an open door. They believe in come one, come all. The difference between the two of them is just the PR. The Tories pretend that they don't want everyone coming in when they effectively do, because the proof's in the pudding. So I don't know what you do. People are leaning more and more and more towards the Reform Party, which I also find a little bit naive. I don't think the Reform Party, even if they got MPs, will do anything different to the Tories. When you get rid of political candidates after a Hope Not Hate report, that should tell you everything you need to know about Reform UK.
Wait, what did they do? So obviously I know Hope Not Hate, but yeah. What did Reform do? Who did they get rid of?
I forget the name of the candidates now, because I read this story a few days ago.
But they got rid of some candidates based on a report from Hope Not Hate.
Yeah, of all places. I mean, I could understand.
Of all places, yeah.
And for me, politically, I think that the worst thing you can do as a politician really is apologise. I know that sounds like a terrible thing to say, because I think MPs owe us a lot of apologies. But if you are going to have candidates which stand up and make speeches and statements against open door immigration, and you claim to be an anti open door immigration political party, I'd say you double down on your candidates. You don't get rid of them. But they have. And yeah, I think that when you have that as the alternative, you don't really have one.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, before you go, I'm going to quickly run past this story. I'm just looking for a comment from you, because it's really interesting. It's to do with the Confederation of British Industry, huge lobbying group, obviously. And it's to do with NDAs. Now, most jobs have some kind of NDA attached to them, e.g. not to talk about a project that's being developed, for example. But this is about sexual assault. Sexual assault is a crime, and a judge for one can overrule an NDA which involves sexual assault. And what we're hearing is that up to 10 NDAs have been signed at the CBI after more than a dozen staff allege they have been victims of sexual harassment, assault, and even rape. Charlie, what are your thoughts about that? Should those NDAs be ripped up toot sweet?
I think they should, yeah. If there's an obvious pattern of behaviour like this, as you're describing, 100%, there aren't any excuses for that kind of behaviour. And I think it does a disservice to the victims.
Yeah, and also just because CBI is obviously it's a great British institution in many respects, brilliant at politics. I actually worked there years ago, decades ago even. I had a temporary job as a secretary at the CBI. But I absolutely agree with you. I don't think that NDAs should exist in any form when it comes to any form of sexual assault. And I think that this is really, it's a cover-up culture, isn't it?
It is, and you're seeing that all over the place now. I think we live in an era where it's the democratization of information. So if there's something that needs to be known, someone's going to find out and someone's going to, you know, for want of a better phrase, grass you up. You know, whereas back in the day, I think people are a little bit too afraid. We can't really prove it. You know, it's all paper trails and, you know, we're going to lose that bit of paper here and we're going to, you know, burn that one over there. Nowadays, everything's digital. Everything's got a record. It's very hard to get away with stuff nowadays, I think.
Yeah, excellent point. Charlie, thank you so much for joining us this morning for the News Review. Everybody, it is Charlie Sampson, political commentator and all-round badass, apparently. Take good care of yourself, Charlie. Great to have you with us this morning. Have a great Wednesday. I'll be right back.
From weather and traffic reports
to news of political developments,
we turn to journalists for the information we need to live our daily lives.
Journalists around the world provide the news that is essential for democracy,
for personal freedom, and for safety and stability.
Yet their ability to report freely and safely is under attack like never before.
So many journalists are paying with their lives.
They face exponential risks, and they've already paid a heavy toll.
Death threats, online harassment, and physical attacks
are becoming a daily experience of journalists in all countries.
We just want people to be safe, to be able to get our readers the information that they need to make informed decisions.
They checked my phone and realized that it was Pegasus. I feel myself like I'm naked at the street.
These charges were politicized from the start.
Facts win. Truth wins. Justice wins.
C'est énorme pour moi d'être là, d'être libre, surtout que je m'y attendais pas du tout.
Stand with a free press.
Stand with journalists whose reporting won't be silenced. Press freedom is your freedom.
When the world's endangered animals need help most, when their lives are at greatest risk, when they would otherwise be lost, the International Fund for Animal Welfare is there, taking action to rescue the animals we love, to protect them and their threatened natural habitats. See how you can help animals and people thrive together at joinifall.org.
People might tell you that Lyme doesn't kill people, but we are losing people. People disappear from their lives.
One of the scariest things that I had to deal with was memory loss. Not just like, I don't remember what I did last week, but like, I forgot all the words to my own songs. I remember going to my primary care physician and he was like, you are 100% healthy. There's nothing wrong with you. And my response was, that's impossible, I'm dying.
I wasn't working, so I had all of these hospital bills. We had to move out of our home and move into my parents' basement.
I just wish I could have truly been present in those big moments, you know, when she took her first steps or, you know, her first day of preschool. Lyme is such a thief and it goes undetected because no one is looking for it.
For more information and prevention tips, go to projectlyme.org.
You're with Sonia Poulton on today's News Talk, TNT.
I'm just catching up with the comments. I'm so sorry I haven't been looking at the comments more this morning and engaging with you wonderful, beautiful people. Hello over there on YouTube. Grand risings to you, Teresa and London Lady and Kath and Sick Parvis Magna. I'm sure that means something probably horrendously rude that I don't understand and I've just read it out live on air. But hey, That's the inherent problems with live broadcasting. Anyway, let me just read some of these comments. Drumstick said, I heard Kate's cancer statement in the news yesterday. Why didn't they just tell us the truth from the beginning? Drumstick, where have you been? Where have you been? Is she ashamed or does the royal house see it as a weakness to be ill? Good question. Lord Melbury wants to know if Mariana Spring and Hannah Fry, of course, who made this documentary for bizarre documentary for the BBC, wants to know if they're both MI6 assets. Lord Melbury. Smack your hand, although I did make a video that you may want to check out called Gatekeepers. And also, Brett said, they're all going to ground because they know what's coming. And indeed, and that is often the way, isn't it? I am delighted to be joined. My next guest is Lois McClatchy. She serves as a senior communications officer for ADF UK. ADF UK, if you are unfamiliar, the aim of a motivation of the organisation is to protect everyone's right to live and speak the truth in the UK. Lois, in 2024, that sounds like a tall order.
It's definitely a challenge with all these new laws coming in. As we go past every day, I see new news stories where people's right to live and speak the truth is being censored. So I feel very privileged to work for this organization which stands up for truth.
Never been more needed, frankly, because on April the 1st, of course, no, it's not a joke, but Scotland is about to introduce a new hate crime law. It's sending ripples all across the world because, well, certainly the rest of the UK is extremely nervous that the totalitarian intentions of First Minister Hamza Yousaf is to criminalise free speech and the right to self-expression. What are your thoughts about what he's been saying? And just before I get that from you, did you happen to see that video where he's talking about how we should be registering non-crime hate crime so that we can follow the spike of hatred?
I did see a little clip of that. Now, this is quite a full circle moment for Scotland. If you think back to 1697 was the last time that somebody was put on trial in Scotland for being a blasphemer or a heretic. And we used to have a set of laws that would criminalize people because they spoke out against the Christian beliefs. And that was absolutely wrong. We should never have been putting anyone on trial for raising doubts about the Bible or about Christianity. And it's a good thing that that law has been done away with. But unfortunately now, on the 1st of April, Happy Fool's Day, everybody, we'll be just having another law put in place, which essentially does the same thing. It could put somebody on trial or under investigation or even in prison for up to 7 years if they are found to be guilty of being a heretic of today's orthodoxies, today's sexual beliefs, today's beliefs of kind of the church of woke, if you like to put it that way. So it is kind of an old, old story that is coming back in another form. This law is particularly confusing, I think, because it's so vague. Now, it brings in a new charge that is called stirring up hatred. And that sounds very nice. I don't ever like to be hated. I never like to have anyone around me feel hated. And it sounds like a very friendly thing to do. But the challenge with that is that we don't know exactly what that means. There's no clear definition as to what words or what beliefs will be counted as criminal under this offence against these protected categories of people, and it's unclear why certain categories have been protected and others not. So it puts Scotland in a very difficult situation where we don't know what we're allowed to say, and it will have this chilling effect of people holding back from engaging in important conversations as a result.
I mean, as you say, we don't want to live in a world where people are hating and being hated on. Absolutely. But we already have enough laws to cover this, frankly. For example, in Scotland, since 1986, there's been the offence of stirring up racial hatred. Absolutely right. I totally support that. But, you know, obviously from 1st of April next week. So what they're introducing is that it will cover stirring up hatred on grounds of age, disability, religion, sexual orientation, transgender identity, or variations in sex characteristics. But as many people have so rightly said, and what you've just said really is this is all about perception, right? This is all about how the victim perceives what is being said to them. And it is deeply, deeply concerning. And let's look, for example, of what you represent and what you stand for. You're a Christian, you're pro-life. Do you have fears that people with your views may be criminalized?
With the trend that we're watching across the UK, especially as to the reaction of pro-life youth, I think many people are nervous about their beliefs. If somebody was to tell me that because I think that women and children deserve better than abortion, that they find that offensive or even hateful towards their position or towards their personality or whatever that is, that could put me in a very dangerous, tricky spot. Now, I should say that woman is not a protected category on this list. And so many people are pointing towards conversations about the trans debate or marriage or any of these kind of hot button social issues that are very important at the moment. And of course, many religious Christian communities and other people of different faiths are nervous about whether their beliefs, which have been held for hundreds and thousands of years, about, you know, is marriage between a man and a woman, can a child ever be born in the wrong body? These questions, these beliefs could be picked up or are deemed to be offensive or hateful, even though they are said in an entirely non-hateful way. And that makes many people of faith very, very nervous in Scotland going forward.
And rightly so, because whatever happened to freedom of speech? I'm just looking at the outline from Police Scotland. And so that they say, we'll record all hate crimes and hate incidents in terms of the following definitions: any incident which is perceived by the victim or any other person to be motivated wholly or partly by malice and ill will towards a social group, but which does not constitute a criminal offence, non-crime incident. And that's territory that I really deplore. And that obviously is the video that we're referring to do with Humza Yousaf. And this really deeply concerns me, not least because I have friends in Scotland who say that crime is deeply concerning, like a real crime. And don't get me wrong, I don't want people to feel, you know, like isolated in their own lands because people are being hateful towards them. But we've already seen what has happened with the issue of transgenderism, where people have been arrested and criminalized to a degree, certainly taken to court for misgendering, i.e. correctly noting the correct sex of a person. And so we've already seen that. So this bodes really badly. And Humza Yousaf himself appears to be a fairly deplorable individual who is not above saying fairly outrageous things about people who aren't part of the same demographic as himself, right?
It's interesting, actually. When I, in 2020, I wrote my first ever article for The Times, and the headline was, J.K. Rowling would face criminal trial if under this Scottish hate crime bill. Humza Yousaf actually wrote his own piece a month later and said J.K. Rowling would not be criminalised under this bill. And yet only this month, the SNP have had to walk back a bit. And a new headline in The Telegraph suggested that she could be under investigation. Now, as a side note, last month, Police Scotland announced that they would be dropping investigation of a number of different small crimes, over 20,000 small crimes, including ones that are, you know, certain types of theft. So it could be that Scotland is now the country where you could face a higher punishment if you were to offend someone's personal sensitivities rather than to steal their belongings. So it is quite a bizarre situation in Scotland. But the SNP or the government, the Scottish government, should not really have been making these assurances to us about J.K. Rowling or others like her who tweet their beliefs about biological reality, about the rights of women, and the fact that no child has ever been born in the wrong body and we should never tell them that they are. Because at ADF International, we've been looking at countries across the world who've been bringing in these hate crime laws, and we've been involved in cases around the world, including in Finland, where a lady was prosecuted, a politician and a grandmother has been prosecuted three times her case being appealed for the third time to the Supreme Court because she tweeted a Bible verse challenging whether her church should really have been involved in the Pride Parade in Helsinki. She's been 3 years of criminal trial under a hate speech offence. In Mexico, we've been supporting two different politicians who have been dragged through courts because of their inability how they deem to misgender someone, to change the language, to change the Spanish language to uphold the new orthodoxy on gender. And for their crime, they have actually been convicted of gender-based political violence, placed on a register and forced by courts to apologize multiple times a day for a period of 30 days on Twitter. So these are just a handful of cases that we've seen across the world under these hate crime laws. And there's absolutely no reason why we wouldn't see this in Scotland and in Ireland soon as well, as these censorial laws creep across Europe. And it's so important. If we look through history, even just up to 100 years ago, we see the importance of allowing people to express their beliefs, of allowing those conversations to take place, even with people with whom we disagree. Every society depends on the democratic right to have free and open conversations and even debates and arguments when it comes to it. And that's my concern for my country of Scotland, that we won't be able to do that anymore. And it won't be a very democratic or helpful place to be living for the next generation growing up there.
Such a pity. I mean, it is such a shock what some of the things that you're saying there. And obviously, we all, I think most people listening to this get the impression that this is far less about hate crime and more about controlling us, right? Controlling what we have to say, our views, even probably to a degree who we engage with. And these things really concern me, and especially in Scotland. So the initial headlines, of course, was they're going after comedians, and then they were forced to say, we're not going after comedians, although obviously stand-up shows will still fall under their remit. Now, Scotland, for anybody who's ever been to Edinburgh Fringe, and I count myself amongst that, including last year when I went to see my own daughter's play at Edinburgh Fringe, that really is very concerning indeed, because this is now about clamping down on, you know, our creativity as well in a place, Scotland, which is renowned for that. How troubling, Lois.
Oh, it's tragic. If you talk about this, the great Scottish Enlightenment, that was very much dependent on the discussion of new ideas, challenging social norms. And yet now we have the great Scottish Enlightenment, where we won't be able to have these conversations at all. And if you've been following the news surrounding the fringe over the last few years, you'll notice that each year, people are being disappointed with the quality of comedy, with the fact that it doesn't seem to push boundaries anymore. Right. You'd be able to chart that since about 2020. And even the jokes of the years are becoming more and more tame to most people's taste. And that was just never what the fringe was ever about. It was about challenging. It was even kind of from a left-wing perspective about free speech, challenging the political orthodoxies of the day. And that was always the role, you know, of the court jester back in the day, was to be able to say the unspeakable, to be able to make people laugh by pointing out something true, to pointing out something challenging to everything, the things that we assume, the beliefs that we just take in from the culture around us. And so it's a real shame to see something that we have been, you know, well known around the world for is Scottish hospitality, Scottish humour, Scottish events. And I think that will really damage our reputation internationally, as people say, well, we can't do, comedians are hardly going to be attracted to a country where they could easily be criminalized for making a joke that the government deems goes too far. Not even the audience. Most comedians are looking for their audience's approval. And yet now we have to make sure that it's something that the government would not be upset about, which is essentially quite an authoritarian move.
It literally wouldn't be out of place in 1984, would it? It's just the absolute, to be sanitising entertainment like this. I mean, it was a fact that certainly last year was the first point that it came to my attention that when people were auditioning for Edinburgh Fringe, as one example, if they wanted a female for the role, they had to put, they couldn't just put females or women, they had to put, if you identify as a female, in order not to, and just ridiculous. We're all sick of this nonsense. Hamza Yousaf says that there are built-in safety mechanisms that will stop people being arrested for free speech. Apparently, there are 400 hubs that have been set up across Scotland where you can report these crimes, including in venues that are like, sex venues, right? Is this correct?
That's right. So there's over 400 venues, one of which is a sex shop in Glasgow, one of which is a mushroom farm, I believe, in the borders, and one of which is the address of a council building actually close to where I'm from in Dumbartonshire, which actually has been demolished for a number of years now. So we're a bit confused about where people should go for that one. But it is bizarre, you know, to have these stations set up, including in this sex shop across Scotland, where people can kind of run in and tell tales. And I heard someone say this, I heard somebody offend someone like that. And it also, it can be a third party who reports also. So even if there's a conversation happening and somebody isn't offended, if someone deems to the words being said to have been hateful or to been stirring up hate, they can go and report, and that will trigger an investigation. So I am actually only just surprised that the Police Scotland have the capacity to deal with this. When the hate speech bill was initially passed all the way back in 2021, Police Scotland had a surge of reports of hate crimes, and many of those came from Twitter spats, we're told by the Federation of Scottish Police. And they actually asked the government to delay and give them more time to prepare because they were facing such a deluge of pressure. We get that 3 years were given. And I actually was very sympathetic to Police Scotland for their needs there. I thought they were put on in this ridiculous place. They weren't trained to be policing Twitter spats. They're trained to be policing crime. Now, my patience did get a little strained recently when we saw the fruition of those 3 years of training and education and preparation. And I don't know if you saw this, Sonia, but their campaign to alert us all to the incoming hate crime bill.
The hate monster! Hate
was all about the hate monster. And we were told, and I must say also that, as an aside, the site had very, very poor grammar. But the hate monster site told us that men especially, who are might have a white sentiment entitlement, aged 18 to 35 from low socioeconomic status, were particularly vulnerable to being overcome by the hate monster. And the hate monster can make us feel angry. And the before you know it, it says, you might have committed a hate crime.
No, that's how Hamza Yousaf makes us feel, Lois. Listen, unfortunately, we have to go there.
Sure.
Thank you so much for joining us this morning. You've been absolutely brilliant. This is Lois McClatchy. She is a senior communications officer for ADF UK, and she's doing what everybody should be doing, protecting everyone's right to live and speak the truth in the UK. And amen to that. Hallelujah to you, Lois. Thank you so much for joining us this Wednesday and showing the utter idiocy that is taking place in Scotland at this moment in time. We'll be right back after the news.